Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Good evening, and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I tell you, I am so elated to be here with you another Tuesday. We have an exciting show tonight. I have also my co-host, Shirley Carter. Shirley, are you there?
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us tonight. And tonight's show is something for everyone. So please tune in, call a friend, and invite them to listen in. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, we have so much to cover tonight. Before we go into the show, I want to remind our listening audience that Soul Retreat 2014 is September 12th and 13th at the beautiful Renaissance Fort Lauderdale Cruise Port Hotel, where we're transforming lives for the future. We'll be focusing on business, family, finance, and health, and I have bought and congregated some of the best speakers that will be presenting at the event. We have Ona Brown, Leslie Calvin Brown from the First Family of Motivation, Serena Travis Brown, Dr. Clarence Granich, Sharnita Wiggins, Dr. Robert Lemon, and we have a whole night of entertainment with R&B and gospel. We have Sandrina Taylor, Clarissa Carter, Blade Martin, and my signature rap session will take place where we have the men and women in separate locations, and we do real talk, and then we close it out with the 70s party. So I invite you to go to fromthesoulofawoman.com and listen in and find out the information for the retreat, and you also get a chance to see the promo video for that. Tonight's discussion is about the power of the father, and I have Dr. Simon J. Roker. He's a motivational speaker, teacher, entrepreneur, and author. He's a husband and a father, and we wanted to invite him in tonight to talk about the power a father holds in the family. Dr. Roker, are you there?
I am here. Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm excited to have you. I know you personally as being a good father, but, you know, yesterday we had some tragic news where a comedian, actor, producer, Robin Williams, took his life. He committed suicide. He was 63 years old. And I'm hearing a lot of movement, so if you can limit your movement and papers rattling, I don't know who that is, but if you can please limit that. He committed suicide yesterday, and I was so troubled about it. You know, I had to prayerfully wait, and to make sure I said something on Hot Topics from the Soul, because that's what Hot Topics is. We talk about things that are relevant, what's going on in individuals' lives right now, to be a lifeline to the community. And one of the things I posted on Facebook, for those of you that don't know I'm on Facebook, you can find me on Facebook. My name is spelled V-A-L-O-R-I-E, Parker. You can find me there. And one of the things I posted is, suicide is a mental illness that's hard to detect. It laughs, it sings, and even dances among us. It leaves us with unanswered questions and dismay. It is a spirit that affects the least or the great among us. Notable signs are isolation, mood swings, outbursts, talks about death, and unhappiness. We must pay attention and listen to what's being said. Don't brush it off by saying to an individual that talks or demonstrates any of these, oh, pull yourself together, suck it up, you know, you get over it. Because of the fact that it is a mental battle, a depression that they are struggling with to exist. And I wrote that one thing that I remembered in my hour of despair when I was battling with depression, and was that I didn't want to end my life and then eternity live it, torment it as well. You know, the Word of God says, those of you know I'm a believer, and Jesus said, cast all your cares upon him and he will grant you rest for your soul. He is the master healer of broken hearts and wounded spirits, as he talks about in 1 Peter 5:9. And I, you know, invite the listening audience to pay attention to those surrounding you. You know, I always say it doesn't cost you anything to love or hug on somebody, but it is one of the most precious gifts that you have and one of the experiences that you will not live to. You won't regret giving someone love. You know, sometimes you say, well, you know, I'm hugging and loving on people that's not loving. Well, you know, they're battling something inside that, you know, they don't quite understand. But the old folks used to say, I'm going to love the devil out of you. And so this is what is first step into helping someone that's going through depression or contemplating suicide and get professional help. There is professional hotlines that you can call to get help in cases of suicide, where you want to talk to someone regarding the way you're feeling and distresses that you're in. I will give out the number for the suicide prevention hotline, and you can also find the information on my website from thesoulofawoman.com. I have information on there regarding domestic violence and suicide, because as those of you know that follow my show, I am a survivor of domestic violence. So suicide kind of falls hand in hand regarding that situation. So, you know, we have the hotlines there, resources available for both domestic violence, which is 800-799-7233. That's 1-800-799-7233 for domestic violence. And for suicide is 1-800-SUICIDE, which is 800-784-2433. It is reported that over 32,000 people commit suicide each year, and young adults between the ages of 5 and 24 included in that, along with 1 out of 65,000 that are between the ages of 10 and 14 commit suicide. That is so troubling, so distressing, and so heartbreaking. I started Hot Topics from the Soul almost 4 years ago, and the reason I started this show, the very first show I started, I said to individuals that I started the show because over the Christmas holiday, three young men had more courage to take their lives than to live it. And I was so heartbroken over the dreams that were lost and so distraught because, you know, I have teenage children. I had it back then. They were teenagers. They're grown now. And it was so disturbing. I didn't understand it. And I said I wanted to do something. I wanted to provide an outlet, a base where people can talk and share what's going on and not have to worry about stones being thrown at them because of their opinions. And, you know, so many times we live lives trying to fit into the mold that people set for us, that blueprint that has been drawn out, that our parents and our friends outline for us and want us to fit into that. And it becomes depressing when you can't be and can't express who you are, and when you're broken, can't communicate where that is. It is a mental struggle for individuals to exist, and we must take a deeper look at that and pay attention. to that which is surrounding us regarding suicide. Robin Williams, he would say he had it all, fame, fortune, but there was a void in there that he couldn't erase, that he couldn't fill. And he thought it was better to eliminate himself. You know, suicide is, a hard thing because of the fact that, and I say it's selfish because you don't have any thought or care about the effects that it will have on those that remain. So we'll continue to pray for him and for his family and his friends and those that are on the airwaves that are hearing my voice. We're praying for you. And, I gave out those numbers to call for if you want to talk to somebody and get some information on, to just talk through your issues. It's 1-800-784-2433. 1-800-784-2433. Dr. Roker.
Yes. Hello.
I thank you so much for allowing me that opportunity to get that off of my spirit, because like I said, it's still troubling me when someone, loses their life, and, we have so much opposition going on in the homes. For the past couple of weeks, I've been talking about the family. Is it facing extinction? Non-existent. One parent in the household. Even when there's two, the children face abandonment issues. You, as a father and a leader in your home, tell me what your day is like as it relates to your children, and express, how old your children are and their sexes, please.
Yes, again, thank you for the opportunity to be here on this program. I definitely concur with all that you've said as it relates to the current situation surrounding the legend actor Robin Williams, and we'll continue to keep his friends and keep his family in our positive prayers. As it relates to my children, I can't say as it relates to my children unless I say my family, because my first responsibility, of course, I'm a spiritual person as well. I happen to worship in the Christian faith because I felt that that was the greatest form of expression that works for me, and I found the results that I needed as it relates to life in my faith. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who have not discovered some form of faith or the other. Of course, Christianity and my belief in God is something that works and has kept me and has given me a good foundation as it relates to the family and as it relates to my life. Of course, I don't discriminate against other people from other faiths and other belief systems, but I found this to be the most effective and most viable expression that has produced the results in my life and that have kept me up to this point. But let me address the issue as it relates to the family and my children. According to my belief system, the family is the most powerful institution on the planet. In fact, it is from the family that every institution that exists originates from. It is a spring off from the family, from athletes who are successful to politicians to political figures and world leaders. Each of them have had to pass through some structure or some form of the family. In most cases, it is usually a mother and a father. Very few times it's a single father situation, but usually it is a single mother situation. And I want to address a few things as relates to the family. But to answer your question, my day begins with my family and I, my girls, and those who are part of my home, and to enter into a time of prayer and meditation where I lead my home into a prayer for giving thanksgiving, and also for the just gratitude and of all the things that we have received up to this point. And we begin our day with that, and then we switch over to from Thanksgiving to I provide a spiritual covering over their life, and believing that the angels of God that will surround them and go with them throughout their day, wherever they choose to go, whether it be activities or school. Of course, they're just coming out of the summer, so now it's back to school. And so I begin to build what I call a hedge. Although it's not visible to the eye, I believe it's visible in another realm. It's invisible to us, but I think that it's important for me to give positive declarations over their life and begin to give them affirmation and reaffirmation that helps them with their boost their spirit and their their confidence for the day, to let them know that whatever come against them, that they could tackle it. That Dad is here covering them, that I'm praying and meditating and releasing powerful, positive words and speaking life into their situation, whether they're with me or not. So I start my day with that energy, with that reinforcement, with that force. And I believe that whether people believe it or not, I think for me it works, because I can see the results. Of course, my girls are now 17 and 15. So one is a 12th grader, the other one is in high school and getting ready to go in next school year to the 10th grade. So we start that day with that. And, of course, Mom joins us as well. And I just feel it's necessary to bring that type of encouragement to them and reinforcement in their life, so that they can know or have a consciousness that whatever is going on throughout the day, whatever challenges they face, that a word, a force, an energy, a power has already gone before, and it has already spoken into that day. So I have actually commanded their day, commanded their morning with the positive affirmations that and words of faith that speaks right into their life and our life and our home. An answer to the first question.
Okay, now how do you create that? Now you say they're teenagers, and you're dealing with where you're trying to raise them in a stable Christian home, and yet you send them out amongst the world.
Yeah.
How do you identify, how do you relate to them on that level, and what preparations have you put in place so that the exposure that they'll receive on the outside from your home won't allow them to deviate?
Yeah, good question. Socialization is a very powerful thing. From the girls were at birth and even immediately after birth, as they became toddlers, we kept them socialized in an environment that was conducive for the belief system that I wanted them to subscribe to. And I believe most parents, in some form or the other, have some type of influence over their children's belief system. But really, we did not want to influence them as much as we wanted to model in front of them and be an example to them. So I did not just become a good father. That was a period of trial and error, and I had to learn. And in learning to become a good father, I had to first be a good example to my daughters in front of them as it relates to their mother. So pursuing becoming a great father, I stumbled on becoming a good husband. So trying to be an example for them kind of forced me to be a better spouse and a better person individually. There were certain things that I did not want them to succumb to. There were certain things I did not want them to be exposed to. And even as a young man, growing up in the United States, by the time I was 18, I was in the United States, from the Caribbean, from the islands, but my experience and my exposure was limited as well, and I saw the ills of our society. I saw the ills of the generation, and I saw everything that's counter the family. There are forces out there that are strictly counter family, and they are against any type of value system that establishes good morals. So we are living, unfortunately, in a culture where good is bad, and bad is viewed as good, and so everything is polar opposite. And I made a decision before my daughters were born that if I ever have children, that they'll be raised in an environment that speaks to where I want them to go rather than what the culture say. And, you know, I unfortunately, we didn't have to lay down a bunch of unnecessary rules. My girls, they go out with their friends. They have great times. They do the things that teenagers do. But, you know, because of the example that we've lived before them and because of the socialization that we've had them socialize, there are certain things that have allowed them to establish their own value system based on the boundaries that we have set, and it was modeled out. So Christianity was not a something that we do as a religion or we practice as just as a faith. It was something that we began to really experience, and that became, a better solution to the challenges, and it provided a good value system. You know, they study Proverbs, and Proverbs that teach you just how to be a good person. Whether you're a Christian or not, you can read those type of philosophical and religious books that can speak to your human existence and encourage you and give you some insight and wisdom. And I just think that these girls have subscribed to a faith that they've seen work for their parents. And if they were to choose to be to go to another faith, I would have some questions and some concerns. But we have taught them to investigate and to study, you know, scripture, to study what we're saying, to investigate, to study, to check it out. You know, you're living in a world, you don't want no one to pull a wool over your eyes. So we teach them to be thinkers. And in being thinkers, you have to challenge sometimes the things that you've been taught. And I'm happy that they have subscribed to our faith because it is a good living. It's a living faith that they see produce results not only in our life but in their life.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I liked about you is that you take time with your daughters and take them on dates.
Yes, yes. You know, I would say that has been, again, early on as they were younger. You know, mom would be at events or working, or she have some other activity that she need to give attention to, and I have to quote unquote. I don't want to say babysit, but I had at the time that's really what it was. But you really don't babysit when it's your kids. It's really not babysitting, but I don't know what else to say. So I had to keep the girls, and I'm keeping toddlers and this little person that I really don't know. but I want to get to know her. I want to get to know them. And so you're talking with them and they're having questions about, you know, things they're seeing, the environment, things that's going on. And now you're beginning now through that, again, happenstance or you know, thrown into it. You begin to bond now with a child. You know, most people will tell you that the mother, it doesn't matter even if you're married or not, the female spends the majority of time with the kids. Of course, during my college years and my wife work schedule and during, the time when I had to do work or ministry work or other activities and we'd rotate, I had no other choice. There was no babysitter, so I had to be present, you know, feed them, spend time with them, take them to the mall, take them. And as a result of doing that, it forced me to create a bond that they were yearning for anyway. But I wouldn't know that. Mm-hmm. I would not know that had I not paid attention. So as a result of that bond, we begin to bill on it as they get older and went into their preteens and so forth. We'd go out, you know, movies and go out eating and doing other things. And I begin to show them this is what somebody, when you start, when you reach the age of dating, and I told them that their age of dating is 21. but they're really at the age now of dating. But I told them that this is what you're going to look for somebody to, you know, take you to a place of value, open your door, spend the best on you, come and get you, treat you as the queens that you are. You're my princesses, but you become somebody queen. And you have to carry yourself in a way that bequeaths that. And so there are certain things that they don't wear, not because they can't wear it, it's because they choose not to wear it because it just brings down their value. So it's not something we have to say. They don't want to reduce themselves to looking like a stripper. But they know I'll have something to say about it. But they know enough that these are not things they do just in our presence. These are things they do outside of our presence. Because children, you know, children can put on. They could pull good wool over their parents' eyes. You know that. So I watch my daughters, and I watch how they carry themselves as ladies. And I'm very pleased and very proud. I think their mother has played a tremendous role in that as well. But I know that I had to have my hand in it and have my hands on. And, you know, I'm just pleased that I've had an opportunity to do that.
You know, at the top of the show, I was talking about, you know, the depression and suicide. Can you shed some light on, because with me, when I went through my divorce and had my four children, you know, there was depression that went on. The shift of going into another school, we having to relocate, and the fact that we didn't have anywhere to live at all for 3 months. And it caused a depression, and they had abandonment issues. And it was a process of pulling back the layers, and I was able to accomplish that with communication, constant communication, and also what I would do would spend time with them individually, talking to them, finding out where their heart is and what's going on in their world. How important do you think that type of process is as it relates to children, men, boys and girls, that are going through depression? Do you think the presence of the parents' involvement will help eliminate some of that?
I do believe that the parents' involvement will help reduce the risk.
It won't cancel it out. It won't cancel it out because it is really – it's an individual thing. Like I said, suicide is a mental issue. It's an inward battle that individuals experience, and they don't know how to express because we are all created differently. The participation.
Yes, absolutely. I do believe that a father's involvement or a good parent's involvement, particularly in the context of a father, because I'm a father, I believe that will reduce the risk and help and eliminate, for the most part, a lot of the error rate. Let me address the issue of suicide, and I want to, I'm also in the legal field, not just a spiritual person and in the Christian faith. I'm also in the legal industry as well. And one of the things suicide, that we look at suicide from a legal standpoint, from number one, suicide in its most simplest term means to sue yourself. You are suing yourself inside. You are bringing a suit against yourself. You're charging yourself with an indictment. You are saying to yourself everything negative that have ever been said to you. One of the things as it relates to suicide or even murder, which, you know, depends on how you look at it, there's a legal standard that talks, that deals with state of mind. And state of mind is very important when people commit these type of unfortunate acts, whether it's somebody who does commit murder or whether somebody accidentally kills somebody else, manslaughter, or whether somebody just checks out of here by popping some pills or putting a gun to their head. State of mind is so important. Of course, talking to our loved ones and looking at signs, there are always warning signs. People don't just decide today just to do this thing. There are always warning signs. And people need to know, our loved ones need to know that they're loved, that they're cared for, that they're supported, and that somebody is here who's available to them to be a support system. And so as it relates to that issue of suicide, depression, and all that stuff, I tell you, my heart really goes out to people who get to a place where they feel there's no more hope. They are hopeless, or they reach a place of hopelessness where, like you said, it seems it's better to check out than to live. And, you know, my heart bleeds for anyone who family has experienced that, any remaining relative who have to now live forever until they pass on to with the reality that somebody that they love have decided to go out like that. And then what makes it, Val, even, add more stress to it is the person that's remaining has to forever wonder, is there something I could have done? Is there something I did not see? They always play back the last conversation they had with the person to think, what was he trying to tell me? What was she trying to say? And everybody carries the blame. Now, guess what happens to the person who's remaining? Mm-hmm. They go through almost a place of depression.
Right.
Unfortunately, because now they have to live not just with depression, they have to live with the guilt. The guilt that maybe I could have done something. And those who are listening, if you've experienced that, a lot of times there are signs, but a lot of times there are not signs. A lot of times we miss it because people are suffering in silence, and they do not necessarily reveal to you their true face. And I've discovered with humans is that people don't tell you everything. People won't necessarily say what's really bothering them. They won't get to the root of what's bothering them. So it takes some time, discernment. It takes just observing their body language changes and patterns of communication. If you're close to somebody and you notice maybe, what may have happened with maybe has there been a shift in their spending or something. There's something that should stand out. But a lot of times people say, yeah, I saw it, but I wasn't thinking, I didn't think anything about it. Maybe person start drinking more, staying out more. Something shifts, something changes. And so, we all have to be watchful because suicide can come to any of our families. You have to be watchful and prayerful because it can come to any of our door, and we really need to be helping, offer help, hope, and comfort to those who remain and those who are grieving and those who are in pain because we just don't know. Also, let me end this with this quick point. When people go through divorce, one of the things that I've discovered in counseling, and I've been a counselor for about 15 years, in counseling people, those who have experienced divorce, and I'm a Christian counselor, one of the things that I've discovered is during the holiday times, it's like all of a sudden depression comes during any type of key holiday time, whether it's Christmas or New Year's, any time where families would normally be together, Thanksgiving, it's like, life is at a standstill because you're no longer a key component of this culture anymore, of this life culture with family anymore. So, again, people, what they do, get into depression. And I'm sure suicide rates increase during those times of the year. So we definitely
during the summertime.
It is during the summertime, okay.
Yeah, the highest rate is actually in the summer.
Mm-hmm. Is it in the summer among divorcees or in the summer just in general?
It is the summer in general, and as I said, that 1 in 65,000 children between the ages of 10 and 14 commit suicide. You know, school is out then. You can only speculate maybe the shift in going to another school or something, you know, relationships usually crumble during the summertime.
Yeah.
People move during the summertime. A lot of things cause people to spin off into depression. So I thought it was the holiday as well because, as I said, I started the show right after the holiday because three young men took their lives. But in doing further research, it was this highest was in the summer.
Okay. Okay. That's interesting.
Yes. Okay, were you going to continue for your point? I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah, I was speaking as it relates to married couples and divorce and the issue of divorce as it relates to the remaining spouse, you know, as it relates to relationships and whether male or female, where people do hit those low spots during particular times of the year. But, I mean, I was just thinking about your point as it relates to teenagers because you're absolutely right, or in general, because people do go, you know, the summer's a very, even though it's a good time for us as it relates to parents and children being out of school, it is a stressful time. And, you know, for certain age demographics, really brings on a lot of stress because of whether people's expectations or whatever it is, it just adds to it. So I just wanted to chime in on that one.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. I'm going to open up the lines for anyone that have questions or comments. You can press 1 to be queued in with any questions or comments. I'm speaking to Dr. Damon J. Roker. He is out of Memphis, Tennessee. He's a motivational speaker, teacher, entrepreneur, author, life coach. And we are talking about the power of the father and the significance that a man, a father, plays in the role of their children, whether it be male or female. Dr. Roker happens to have two daughters, and he was speaking from the fact of the expectations that he set for his daughters and the participation that he has in their lives to help cultivate them to be the young princesses that will one day be queens.
Yes, yes. Also, let me say this as well, and not just the expectation. What is key is that, you know, I made it a point to set the example too, because children a lot of times don't necessarily do what you say. They do what they see. And I try to set an example and also, you know, reverse the image and the picture of what has been perpetuated and perpetrated in this generation of how young ladies, young women, and men should act and respond to each other. Like I said, being a good father enabled me to be a better husband and even become a better person. And it wasn't until I put my fingers on the pulse of fathering that everything in my life began to really evolve to the place of tranquility and contentment where I'm at today.
Mm-hmm. And you have an absolutely beautiful, sweet-spirited wife, Erica.
Thank you. Yeah, she has. She has made me housebroken.
Yes, I am so glad that she was a strong enough queen to handle you.
Yes, thank you. I'm grateful as well. She hung in there, and so we have been at it approaching 16 years now.
Yes. Call of 5071, you're live.
Good evening, Dr. Val.
Good evening.
This is Velton Shaul. I just wanted to call in and commend you on an incredible show. This topic is so important to our community, especially the youngsters that are 20% of the current population, but 100% of our future. And the fact that we need to spend more time doing the things that our speaker has talked about being good fathers, because so many of us are absent from families. And I'm just very excited to hear this topic and the talk that he gave us this evening. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so
awesome.
Much
Bless.
For tuning in. Appreciate your
Thank
support.
You. Thank you, sir. Bless you.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Roker.
Yes.
This is Shirley Carter.
How are you? Long time, don't hear from.
I know. Wonderful.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm just smiling when I hear you speak of your relationship with your daughters and how it began as a learning curve for you, being a father at home with them during a very special point in their lives when they're getting to know who they are and then they're also bonding with you. And to hear that your challenges as well as your triumphs in setting a standard for them in their lives and what to expect out of the man that comes into their lives. So I really salute you on that. Being a father that is willing to step out and say, I'm going to show my daughter this is what they should find when the right man comes into their life. This is what they should see, at least this, and even more. We do need more fathers like you to interact with our young ladies and to groom them in a way that you can sit back one day and say, job well done. And then I wanted to also comment on the suicide. And listening to it, I had a brother to commit suicide in 1995, and I, too, was one of those people who wondered if there was something I missed in my conversations with him.
Yes.
And sitting and listening to you speak on it, it did affect the whole family. We all went on what you may call a guilt trip, because he did reach out to all of us at one point and in different ways. And I clearly remember one conversation I had with him where he told me the next time that I saw him, it would be at his funeral. And I said, stop playing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was 2 years later that I saw him, and it was at his funeral.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, thank you so much, Shirley, for your input on that. I want to address your comment on the suicide issue. I was just thinking back to a hip hop artist who was killed next month would make. I don't know how many years Tupac has been dead, but him and other artists who suffered the same fate, and a lot of these guys begin to talk, which I look at as almost prophetically, that they saw that their end was coming somehow. And, I mean, none of us know when the end is coming or how it's going to come, but a lot of times, you know, the soul is a very serious thing. There is life after this place, after this dimension, Earth. And what one do here and the decisions we make here is really determines how you're going to live on the other side. You know, I really look at suicide also as a permanent decision to a temporary problem, a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Because whatever the problem is today, wait till tomorrow, it won't really look as big. And I believe everybody, if they'd be honest, at some point thought about taking the car and running it off the bridge or somewhere in that place or wonder whatever, and probably for the sake of your children say, oh, I'm not going to do that, or whatever the case may be. Okay, you know, we all have had hit a point somewhere where we just wanted to check out voluntarily or involuntarily, just wanted to have a desire to leave here. In the holy scriptures of the Bible, even David and others begin to talk about this experience. David and Job and Solomon and others, and the list goes on, great men talk about, I just want to just get out of here because the precious was so great. This is why there must be a coming together where, you know, we should not live alone in community. The Christian scriptures do say two is better than one, because if one falleth, the other is there to help him up, to pick him up, to pull him up. And so we all really, in a sense, have to find a way to be our brothers or our sisters' keeper and just to look for the good in them, that person, even when they've made poor choices. And, you know, you can rise from this. You can rebound from that decision. This is not the end of the world. Our host, Val, Shirley, made a good point about children living under the weight and the pressure of the expectation of parents who must put a yoke almost upon their kids of what they are supposed to be rather than what that child is born, is was created to be. And I'm not at the experience of someone in my family, but I've had close family friends and others who have exited this life in such a disheartening manner, and it leaves me to just wonder, you know, what could we have done? What could I have said? What, perhaps maybe the day, that Tuesday, I thought about calling him at 11 o'clock. I missed. I didn't call him. I got busy, had to do something else, and it slipped my mind. I'm like, oh, goodness, I should have called that. And then they're gone later that week. These things torment. It mess with us, don't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, we really need to just give more, love more, try to be more compassionate of people. When people reach a place of depression, I have compassion for them. Because but for the grace of God, there could have been me. There goes I. You know, I don't know what drives people to a place of hopelessness and despair where they can't come, you know, feel like they can pull up. So, you know, there's some things that's just in God's hands. We can only do our part. And, you know, my desire is to be the best person I can be and be the best friend or loved one that I can be to those who are here, because you just never know when their time is going to be or even your own. So that's my thoughts there.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
You know, I was sitting here thinking, and one of the main problems that individuals have, young and old, is the rejection issues, and they get like roadblocked in their emotions where they feel that delays and rejections are denials, and they lack the steam to persevere to get to the next level. But I want to say to you that are listening that if you find yourself in this perplexed situation, that the key is calling on a power higher than your own, because who you are right now is not good enough and is not making it, and that higher power is God. And the next step is to reach out, get some help. I gave toll-free numbers that you can call, so you don't have to even have any money. I don't know if they have pay phones around. Everybody usually have cell phones, but I gave out 800 numbers that you can call for suicide, which is 1-800-SUICIDE. If you don't have a pen, it's, you know, simple to remember, and 1-800-784-2433. And domestic violence is 1-800-799-7233. You know, I know about these numbers because in domestic violence, I contemplating suicide. I was like, I just wanted it to stop. It was like every day, the badgering, emotional, didn't know what to expect from one day to the next. So, if you know, I'm an adult feeling that, imagine a child that, you know, going to school, dealing with bullies every day, and dealing with the rejection and peer pressure and all that he has to face. The lions and the Goliaths out there are so much bigger, so much greater now. You got these gangs that have guns and knives, and you just feel like you just want to stop, like you just want everything to stop. Well, you can reach out and dial a number, and someone will be at that other phone to hear you out and lead and guide you into a clearer path where you can see yourself and get a focus with new eyes. And I promise you, if you just hold on and dream of those things that you envision for yourself, like whatever it is that you want to do, become a doctor, lawyer, dancer, singer, actor, see yourself doing it. Read books, motivational tapes, surround yourself with people that are already doing what you want to do. And that will help you get to the next level to cause that shift. Yes, it's going to be some discouraging times. You know, a lot of people fail their way to success, and some people fall into success, and some people work their way to success, but everything comes with a price, and we must participate in whatever that price is that we have to pay. And in your life, contemplating and in your life will deny us of knowing how great and how magnificent you are. Don't rob us. Don't rob the family. Don't rob the world. Don't rob your children that are to come if you don't have children now. Don't rob the children that you do have of knowing just how wonderful and powerful you are. You may say, well, Val, I don't feel wonderful. I don't feel power. Everything is falling apart. Well, I have a lot of those days where it feels like things are falling apart. But, you know, he that would have friends must first show themselves friendly. You can pick up the phone and call somebody that you trust and that you know loves you and share with them what's going on with you, have them pray with you, have them talk it out, and hopefully give you some instructions on things to do to cause that shift to happen in your life. But checking out is not the answer. The Lord will soon come, soon enough. We don't have to help him.
This is true. Mm-hmm. What a powerful truth. What a powerful truth. Let me also, if I may, let me make a quick point as it relates to fathering, because I had some points and some thoughts that I was thinking, but...
Absolutely. Please give those before we leave, because we want to make sure that we give that advice to help us become better parents.
Yes. I tell you, fathering is a great experience, because in fathering your children, you discover even the more who you are, because children reveal really what you are, even through the testing, and they're testing sometimes the limits and the boundaries. But four or five things I would say that I believe is key to a father is that a father first must be, in my context and the faith I believe, must be the priest of his home environment, be the watcher, the watchman of the environment as it relates to making sure that those who are there in the household, that they subscribe to a faith higher than themselves, and that he leads the way, whether he takes them to it or not, but he leads the way first by being an example. They must see him and recognize that he has someone greater than himself that he can look up to as it relates to a higher power, a higher being, and in my case, the Lord Jesus Christ, and my faith in my Christianity and my walk with the Lord. And so he must be, the second thing he must be is he must be a provider. He must be, he's responsible for taking care of that home. The weight and the burden of getting things done rests squarely on his shoulder. There's no such thing as I don't have it. Maybe we need to make some adjustments to get it, but it is I can't do it. There's no such thing, because the family is looking to you. They're looking up to you as a man. They're looking up to you as a father. They're looking up to you as the provider. The next thing he must be is the protector. He's not the bullier. He's not the fighter. He doesn't fight his family. He fights for his family.
Mm.
He doesn't fight his wife and children. He fights for them, and he fights with them. But he doesn't fight them. He protects them. He loves them. And the same arm of protection that brings correction also gives unconditional love. He is not just the provider and the priest and protector, but he's also a person who is make sure that the environment is harmonious. He's the one that makes sure the peace in there. Any home that does not have peace, I could tell you that a father is either out of place or he's not doing what he's assigned to do. He's the one that restores order and peace to the home environment. Wherever there's disorder, he brings his presence alone, brings the order. That leads me to my, I think this is my fifth point now. Is it the fifth point? My fifth point is he must have a presence. His presence must be vital. His presence is key. His presence, and not just presence being present in the home. He must be present while he's in the home. Because a lot of time we can be there but be busy. You must be present in the moment, present as your children and your spouse is talking with you and talking to you. And this has worked favorably for me. I wouldn't say that I have the best home environment in the world, but I think it's much better than average. I think we're doing a pretty good job. And but it took some years to build to that place. He brings the peace, and he brings the presence, and not just having his own presence, but he also brings the presence of God there. And I'd just like to end at that point right there.
Thank you so much. Dr. Damon J. Roker, tell us how we can connect with you.
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter under Bishop D.J. Roker. You could go to twitter.com/BishopDJRoker, or you can go to Facebook, type in my name, Damon J. Roker. Or if you type in D.J. Roker, you should find me. Damon J. Roker will come up on Facebook. If you just type in my initials, D.J. Roker. You can also find me on Instagram, DJ Roker JD, DJ Roker JD. Of course, my website is bishopdjroker.com, bishopdjroker.com. And I thank you and your panel this evening, your co-host, Shirley, for such a wonderful and inspiring discussion this evening. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. I appreciate
thank you
for being willing to participate and to share your heart and share the practices that you share in your home. And I trust that it has been a blessing to the listening audience. So take the show. You can download it immediately and go to the website fromthesoulofawoman.com, and you can replay the show on demand and also email it out to a friend. And, again, those of you that are struggling and trying to find your way through, I want to leave a piece from Marion Williamson, and it is one of my favorite pieces that I love to quote, and it says that our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are more powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? So I encourage you to hold on to that and remember that you are fearfully and wonderfully made, and you have everything you need to make it. Just shake that fear loose, because a lot of individuals, they won't progress and go forward because of fear. But we must fight the fear and do it anyway, as Ona Brown would say. Good night and God bless.
Good night.
God bless.